It finally happened. We got Armageddon in college football this last weekend. It feels like it had been a while since we had a Saturday like this one. Upset after upset, unranked, overranked, blowouts that we didn't see coming in ranked matchups, the only ranked matchup of the weekend. It was a fantastic Saturday of chaos. And that's what we love about this sport, right? It is so incredibly unpredictable. That's what makes it fantastic. That's also why we love the college football playoff. It doesn't totally eliminate you if something like this happens. But these were some of the results that we had. And some of these quote unquote upsets, Vegas had the winner favored. But on paper, like on AP poll ranking, still an upset, like a Washington over a Michigan, Texas A&M over Missouri. Right, like Washington and Texas A&M were both favored, but Texas A&M blew Missouri's doors off. Don't think anyone saw that coming. Washington over Michigan was ugly. We'll get into that. But you had Minnesota beating USC. You had Arkansas beating a Tennessee team that looked, man, they looked so freaking good up to that point, like a potential national title contender. Still could be, but losing to Arkansas is not great. And then the shocker. Of all shockers this weekend, Vanderbilt takes down Alabama after Alabama beat Georgia last week. What? Can you think of a weirder turnaround for an Alabama fan to have to make sense of in their head? To do what you did to Georgia, you almost just blew Georgia out the building. They came back in the second half, but you almost dominated them thoroughly. And then you turn around to Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt is too much to handle. Like, what? That is this sport. This is fantastic. And it's a Saturday like this that should remind you, fans of Ohio State, of Oregon, of Penn State, of Georgia, of whoever, a win is a win, right? Like, Ohio State keeps getting off to these slow starts against teams. Oregon probably didn't beat Michigan State by as much as they planned to or thought they should. And same thing with Penn State over UCLA. You think they should blow their doors off? They didn't necessarily, but they won comfortably. A win is a win. If your team escaped on Saturday, thank your lucky stars. Move on to the next week. Don't think about it too much. Don't dwell on it, because if you survive, you're doing okay in college football. You're doing okay. You're only going to hear my voice today. It is a solo show for me. Corey and Ethan are out. But don't worry, because if you love Big Ten football, you are in the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everybody. Make sure you are following or subscribe wherever you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Get us on Twitter at B1G Banter Pod, on Instagram at B1G Banter. And we've got a heck of a show lined up. We are going to go over the week six games, which had some wild ones in the Big Ten. We're going to go over week seven picks. Hopefully, they are better than what the last 2 weeks have been. I'm not going to lie, everybody. We have been letting you down, especially with Ethan being gone last week. He's been the anchor of this show in terms of picks this year, and Corey and I let you down. But don't worry. Don't worry. We can right the ship. It is not too late. But let's get into what happened last week. We are going to start off with Washington over Michigan. Washington gets their revenge from the national championship game last year, 27-17 over Michigan. Man, this was. It's hard to decide which way you want to tackle this game from. If you want to congratulate Washington on a really big win, one that they kind of needed this year after a couple of heartbreaking close losses. But I'm going to tackle this one from Michigan's point of view because I feel like that's where the storyline is, right? Like, you have a Michigan team that still is really talented, but they're figuring out the offensive side of the ball, to say the least. You've got a coaching staff that's brand new and they're trying to figure things out. So let's go to Michigan's side of this. Michigan has a second half problem. This is now the third week in a row that Michigan has been not just outplayed in the second half, they've been almost dominated in the second half of these games. So let's go back. Let's start with the USC game. USC in the second half of that one at Michigan. And Michigan ended up winning this. They lost the second half 21-13 against USC. The Minnesota game that had the controversial ending, Michigan lost the second half 21-6 to Minnesota, and that was at home. And in the Washington game, at halftime, Michigan was down 14-10. They lost the second half 13-7. This is a really bad pattern, because typically, when you think of second half, you think coaching adjustments. You've seen what has happened in the first half. You've gotten to watch how your team is playing, how the opposing team is responding to them. You get to go in, adjust, and come out with your best, finely tuned game plan to attack them in the second half. And it feels like Michigan's coaching staff is overwhelmed, to say the least. Now, that's just in blanket second half scores. Let's talk about the QB battle that is apparently ensuing into the season much deeper than Michigan fans wanted it to, and I'm sure the coaching staff wanted it to, because Jack Tuttle came into this game for Alex Orji after a few drives. Orji was benched. Tuttle came in, and Tuttle looked great for a few drives. They went down and scored on his first three drives at QB. But it felt like they abandoned what got him into the game. First of all, he's coming in cold, on the road, wasn't planning to start, wasn't planning to play, and he's on the road in a hostile environment at night. And he comes in and he plays great right off the bat. But they gave him some easy throws to get into this. Like, gave him some easy stuff to Samaj, Morgan, short stuff to the sides, quick outs, you name it. And then later on in the game, it felt like they were like, yeah, Jack Tuttle's loosened up. He's lathered up now. Let's abandon play action. Let's just have him sit back there like he's J.J. McCarthy and just dot up the Washington defense. Kirk Campbell. He's not J.J. McCarthy. And you can't play. You can't call the game like he is. And they did that in the second half. And it very well might have cost them. Let's move to the defense, because Michigan's defense, Corey and myself and Ethan, all had Michigan going to the playoffs still this year. Despite the 13 NFL draft picks, despite the big turnover in coaching staff, we picked Michigan to go to the playoffs still. Why did we do that? Because Michigan was supposed to have a, like, guaranteed, write it in stone, top five defense this year in college football. And that was not just like three homer slappy Michigan fans saying, oh yeah, we should have a top five defense in college football. You listen to most shows, most experts, they were like, yeah, the defense can carry this team. They didn't necessarily predict them to be a playoff team or stake their claim, but the defense is supposed to be carrying this team. Wink Martindale is in a load of trouble, because here's where Michigan's defense ranks this season: 48th in total defense, 90th in third down defense, 114th in pass defense, and the rush defense is the only place that they are actually elite. They are fifth in rush defense. Every other part of the defensive game plan and defensive execution flat out sucks. And the thing is, this defense, depending on what mock draft you look at, three first round picks, sometimes three top 15 picks. They have the best duo of defensive tackles in the country. They have arguably the best corner in the country in Will Johnson. Now, he has had his spots this year where he has not looked fantastic. And that's on him, right? But nevertheless, they have one of the best corners in the entire country. They have a defensive end who, going into last week, was top 10 in the country in sacks. So, okay, you got a great pass rusher. You've got run-stopping defensive tackles. You've got a lockdown corner. Am I missing something? Is there a reason that Michigan's defense should be putting up numbers that are this bad? This is unacceptable. Their tackling looks extremely poor. And that's coaching, that's preparation, right? Like, that's not attacking the details during the week or in the off season, whenever it may be. I would not be shocked if Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator, was one and done at Michigan. Because the most disappointing part about this team is the defense. And as a fan, you're looking at this team, right? And you're trying to diagnose and say, is it coaching or is it player execution? At the end of the day, what's the answer to that question every single time, if you're being honest? The answer is both. But you're trying to figure out who to place this on the most, right? And as a fan watching this and looking at the facts, look, I can accept mistakes from the team, especially on offense, given how much you lost. I can accept mistakes from young players who are playing in under the bright lights for the first time. I can't accept as much the mistakes from the coaching staff and just the team looking unprepared and the team looking uninspired and the offense looking uncreative and the defense looking predictable. That is the stuff that is hard to swallow as a fan, because those are the grown-ups in the room. Those are the guys in charge of getting these players on the same page and pulling in the same direction. And it's not happening. So losing the second half points to coaching, poor tackling points to coaching, having an immense amount of talent on defense and putting up those total numbers points to coaching to me. And then not knowing the QB situation. I mean, they said after the game that Tuttle's been healthy for a few weeks. Okay, if that's the case, Tuttle should have been starting the whole freaking time. Like, how have you gotten the QB decision wrong twice? Like, you put Davis Warren in there, and he has looked like the worst one of the three. Then you put Orji, who looked a little bit better, but still not great. And then you put in Tuttle, who looks like the best. It took you way too long to get that decision right. Way too long if you've been watching these guys all spring, summer, and fall. So that's also inexcusable. And don't hear what I'm not saying. I am not calling for Sherrone Moore's heads whatsoever. He's still new to the job. Still new. Do I maybe regret Michigan not going after Kalen DeBoer?
Maybe a little.
But Sherrone, no one should be calling for Sherrone's head just yet. And I think this loss effectively eliminates Michigan from playoff contention. Maybe not mathematically. I don't know what the math is on their playoff contention. But literally, in a very real world, Michigan out. Not happening. Also, how did we forget to mention this last week? Apparently, Dave Portnoy said on one of his Barstool podcasts that he's going to hit up Michigan and be like, yeah, I'm going to pledge a few million to going to get a quarterback in the transfer portal every year. He said, I will not let Michigan go another year with this quarterback situation. And then I listened to said podcast the following week. Dave Portnoy talked to Sherrone Moore about this. What? That's freaking wild. But it's kind of cool. Like, this is the age of NIL. And Big Cat, also a Barstool guy. And if you don't know these guys, what are you doing? You're not following the right sports personalities. Big Cat also hit up Wisconsin to try to do the same thing. So Wisconsin and Michigan might have much better QB situations going forward in the years to come, which I know both programs would greatly appreciate. But I don't want to go this whole time without talking about Washington. That's a really, really big win for Washington. Band stormed the field. You get a win over a top 10 team, which we all told you Michigan shouldn't have been a top 10 team going into this. But nevertheless, it was a top 10 win. And Will Rogers played pretty well. They brought in a freshman quarterback, Demond Williams Jr., who he kind of looks electric. Like, Washington's got something to look forward to with him. But Will Rogers threw for 271, two touchdowns. And they just, you know, they just didn't beat themselves. They actually overcame some things that could have made this look even worse. They missed another two field goals in this game, I believe. Their kicker was really going through it. He had the yips for a couple of weeks there. But they won the turnover battle, won the penalties, total yards. Washington 429 to Michigan's 287. Michigan cannot move the ball. Just absolutely cannot move the ball. It is sad to see, man. Michigan's fall from grace. You know, as a Michigan fan, you should have known this was coming, but I didn't set myself up emotionally or mentally for this. I was in a state on Saturday. It was not fun. It's not fun to experience if you were in the same room as me. Just ask my wife. It was not a good Saturday for me. And that's all I can say about that game because I have to move on. Actually, what I've decided, what I'm doing from now on, at Michigan's scheduled game time every week, I'm throwing on the national championship game from last year. And I'm just rewatching it, and I'm thinking, wow, what a great win on this Saturday for Michigan. And I'm going to do the same thing week after week after week. And ignorance is bliss this year for me. Ignorance is bliss, because until a new champion is crowned, Michigan are still the champs. And I'm just going to keep telling myself that as if that makes this any better. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Huge, huge win for PJ Fleck. And man, am I upset that Ethan is not here to have to endure this. Minnesota welcomes USC in and beats them 24-17. Holy crap. How did this one happen? I'll tell you how it happened. Minnesota came into this game with the best passing defense in the country, and they left with the best passing defense in the country. Miller Moss only threw for 200 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions. One of them was a game-sealing one that he didn't, like, throw up, but you could kind of say it was a one-interception game for him. But still had a QBR of 67.7. Now, USC ran the ball on him. Woody Marks ran for 134, averaged 6.7 to carry. But Minnesota in this one, Max Brosmer played a heck of a game. And so did Darius Taylor. Max Brosmer ran for 3 touchdowns. They got inside the 5 and told Brosmer, finish it off for us. He had a game-winning QB sneak. That was how they kind of sealed this one at the end. And then Darius Taylor ran for 144, averaged 5.8 a carry. Now, this is kind of strange because after the LSU game, everyone got really high on USC. And they were like, whoa, this USC team might have something really, really special this year. And now it does feel, you know, because after the LSU game, what was the narrative on USC coming to the Big Ten? Like, oh, get ready for your welcome to the Big Ten. Like, your smash mouth, like, run it down your throat football in cold weather. I don't know what just happened in the background, and I don't know if you heard it. But everyone kept saying, like, USC's going to get their welcome. And then the LSU game happened. They're like, whoa, hey now. USC might be welcoming themselves and saying, yeah, we're ready for the party. But Michigan and Wisconsin, not Wisconsin, Michigan and Minnesota both have given USC the exact game that people were concerned about USC being able to handle. And they have not handled it. They have not been able to come out with wins. Both of them were on the road, which obviously plays a role in this. But it is interesting that that story has played out after what we thought USC could potentially be after the LSU game. And similar to Michigan, I think this loss, maybe not mathematically, but literally, puts USC out of playoff contention. There are too many other really good teams in the Big Ten, too many other really good teams around the country that only have one loss at this point. I think USC is down bad, and they are going to have to suffer another year of not making the playoff and underachieving in a year where the playoff expanded to 12 teams. Like, you should have felt fairly good about those chances, especially after the LSU game, and it hasn't panned out. But how satisfying is a Big Ten fan that USC is 1-0 against the SEC, and they are 1-2 against the Big Ten? Those two losses coming to two teams that Minnesota can't do much of anything, and Michigan can't throw the ball. But that's Big Ten football. It is ugly. But if you win football games, who cares what it looks like? Next one on the docket. Oh, finally. We get to talk about a good team. And I hate to say that. Tastes like vinegar coming out of my mouth. But Ohio State beats Iowa 35-7. This game was kind of funny. Because in the first half, you kind of thought you were getting the Cade McNamara that beat Ohio State for Michigan back in 2021. You were like, uh-oh, look out. Cade came here and said, oh, I know these guys and I own these guys. Let me add them. He started this game off kind of hot. Like, he was slinging it all over the place, only had one incompletion at one point after, like, I want to say it was like 8 or 9 pass attempts. And it was like, whoa, Cade came to play. And similar to what they've done all year, Ohio State
slow start. At halftime, this one was 7-0. But then it got out of hand very quickly. Cade McNamara ended up with 3 turnovers in this game. 2 fumbles, 1 interception. Ohio State scored 21 unanswered points in the third quarter, and the game was over after that. And I'm going to harken back to what I said at the beginning of this episode. In a Saturday full of chaos, I saw so many people who were not appreciating what Ohio State did, not just on Saturday, but before Saturday. Plenty of people saying, like, you can see the cracks in the armor for Ohio State. The talking about the slow starts and a couple of turnover issues here and there. Like Jeremiah Smith fumbled in this game. I believe Will Howard threw 2 interceptions. No, make that 1 interception for Will Howard. And then a fumble for Jeremiah Smith. But people talking about, like, they can see the holes with Ohio State. They could see where a team could sneak their way in there and get a win out of the Buckeyes. This team, in my opinion, I'm going to phrase it this way. They have too many erasers on their team to be able to count on a few small cracks in the armor to be enough for a team like Iowa to overtake them. And what I mean by erasers is, like, Jeremiah Smith, yeah, poof, he had a fumble in this game. He also had another sick one-handed touchdown catch where he's holding off a defender with his right hand. With his left hand. One hand catches the touchdown pass with his right, standing in the end zone, and just kind of shoves the DB off with his left hand. And is like, yeah, I just did that. Then you've got Emeka Ogbuka, who to this point in the season has kind of been wide receiver 2 on this game. He went for 71 yards and 3 touchdowns. Oh, then you had Travion Henderson, who he's supposed to be RB1, right? He ran for 61 yards. And then Quinshon Judkins, oh, this is also RB1, 78 yards on the ground. Will Howard ran for a touchdown and then threw for 4? This team can afford a mistake or two. And that's so frightening for every other team that is going to have to play them. And then Ohio State has one of the best rushing defenses in the country. Do you know how beneficial that is for a football team to be able to control your run game? Like, Caleb Johnson for Iowa came into this game 2nd in the nation in rushing. He's leaving this game still 2nd in rushing. And Penn State held him to 86 yards on the ground. Ohio State can do that to people. Ohio State is that legit. They are so freaking good. They made Cade McNamara look like Cade McNamara eventually. Could a slow start against an Oregon this week maybe hurt them a little bit more? A little bit. But again, they have the erasers on their team that you need to come back from holes like that. And I tell you what, I'd much rather be a second half team like Ohio State than a first half team like Michigan. And we keep saying this too. Ohio State reminds us of the Michigan team from last year that won the Natty. Guess what they were? A second half football team. Go look at some of those box scores and look at what Michigan did at the second half. They wore people down. They wore people down. They did it in a different way. They did it with their offensive line and their run game. Ohio State wears you out with everything. Jeremiah Smith is going to wear you down. Emeka Ogbuka is going to wear you down. Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson are going to wear you down. They can wear you down all over the field. And eventually, they are going to break through. And the explosive plays for them, man, explosive plays are such a difference maker when it comes to making up for, like, turnovers and stupid stuff, slow starts like that. Because those are just momentum killers and backbreakers for the opposing team who feels like they have a glimpse of hope against you. And then you have Jeremiah Smith doing the unthinkable down the field. That'll get to a team mentally too. So Ohio State fans or college football personalities that are trying to poke holes in the Buckeyes right now, don't do it. It is probably not going to be a bet that you win. We are going to see this team in the college football playoff. We should see this team deep in the college football playoff. And God, as much as it sucks to admit, they may end up holding the trophy at the end of the year. I think, and a couple of people have said this, other CFB personalities, it feels like Texas and Ohio State, and then a big gap to everybody else. That's what it feels like right now. That's what it feels like, and they might be right. Iowa, I don't know. There's not much to say there. Cade McNamara has not been what they wanted him to be at all. He looks really bad. He looks really bad. Caleb Johnson is obviously a shining star and someone they need desperately to play great every single week in order to win. Their defense is still really good, but that quarterback play has not gotten any better. Very disappointed in what Cade has been for them. You thought he could elevate them to something, but especially with the newcomers now, with USC and Oregon being invited into the conference, and then Indiana and Illinois taking the steps they have, really feels like Iowa's been passed up by some teams they probably shouldn't have. That sucks for Iowa. That sucks for their fans. Okay, let's go to Nebraska, Rutgers. Because I hate to say I told you so. I kind of called this one. Nebraska beats Rutgers 14-7. And what I mean by I called this one is that last week we said Shiano had Rutgers playing the exact type of game they needed to play in order to beat like the Washington team that they beat. And that style of game was don't beat ourselves. Just wait it out, wait it out, wait it out. The other team will make mistakes. Virginia Tech made mistakes. Washington made mistakes. Nebraska also made mistakes in this one. But Rutgers ended up being the team that shot themselves in the foot. Listen to this. Nebraska kept Rutgers out of the end zone 6 times on plays inside the 2. I'm going to say that one more time. Nebraska kept Rutgers out of the end zone 6 times on plays inside the 2. Rutgers also had what should have been one of the easiest touchdown catches ever. They had a wide open man running down the sideline because a Nebraska DB slipped or fell over. And it hit him smack dab in the face mask, bounced off his helmet. Incomplete. That was what teams were doing against Rutgers up until this point. And now Rutgers did it. I don't know. I just got that vibe about Rutgers that it was going to strike midnight at some point on their, I don't want to call it a Cinderella run because they're a good football team, but I didn't think they were as good as their record. Apparently the AP poll agreed too and didn't rank them. And I guess they were right because they go into Nebraska and lose and they're definitely not going to be ranked this week. But I did feel like that was coming for Rutgers. They're still a really good football team with a chance to do something really special. Like this is a good Nebraska team that they lost to. This is not a bad loss for Rutgers. They get Wisconsin, they get UCLA. Those should both be wins. After that, they get USC, which depends on what USC team you get, right? And that's Rutgers going on the road, so USC will definitely be favored. Then they get Minnesota, Maryland, a really, really tough Illinois team, and then a Michigan State team they should probably beat, even though that's on the road. So they still have a shot if things bounce their way. They could end the season with 2, maybe 3 losses max. So Rutgers is not a bad football team, but you know, I think Corey got us all caught up in the hype a little bit. He was very excited. There were a lot of people very excited about Rutgers. But I think Nebraska kind of said, not so fast. Let's pop the bubble, Doug, and come down out of there because reality came in the form of Nebraska. And Nebraska didn't even play particularly well in this game, but it was a weird game. There were like blistering winds in this one, and it was also 97 degrees, so passing game was not super effective. Like Raiola was only 13 of 27 for 134 yards, no touchdowns, 1 interception. That's not fantastic. You don't love to see that. And contrary to what Rutgers had done all year, they actually did stop Nebraska's run game. Nebraska only ran for 97 and averaged 2.3 a carry. But Nebraska won the turnover battle, and again, there were some plays for Rutgers that you thought surely they got to get in the end zone now. And Nebraska's defense stood up. Nebraska's got a good defense. And people were talking about that, rightfully so, in the offseason, that this team, if it took a while for Raiola to get up and running, their defense was going to be able to hold water for them. We look at total defensive rankings in the country. Nebraska's 14th in total defense. That's a legit unit back there. And for both of these teams, well, you know what? I'll get into who I think can and cannot make the playoff here in a minute, but you might like what you hear in a second if you're a Rutgers or Nebraska fan. Other games that happened on Saturday that we're just going to mention the scores. Penn State beats UCLA 27-11. I mean, that should have happened. Although Penn State did not cover. So win column for UCLA, because I think that was the rule that we made, right? If UCLA covers, that should count as a win for them. I think that's a good way to go about the season for them. Wisconsin crushes Purdue 52-6. I think Purdue is much worse than we thought they were. I think they're much worse than we thought they were. And this is the first time all year that my picking the opponent of Wisconsin to cover has not panned out. So that also makes me very furious because I didn't do well in the picks. Indiana beats Northwestern 41-24. Indiana's undefeated. Hello, Indiana's undefeated, and they look freaking awesome. That's kind of good to say. Feels good to say, because they're not undefeated in the way Rutgers was undefeated a week ago, where like they didn't look fantastic, but they were winning. Indiana looks good. They are fun to watch too. Cignetti has got something going at Indiana. This is exciting. I pray to God that he stays there for a while. He's probably going to get poached after this season to go somewhere, which that really, really freaking sucks. I hope he sticks at Indiana for a while. And then Oregon beat Michigan State 31-10. Let's see, because I keep harping on Michigan State and their turnover issues. Did it happen again in this game? Team stats, turnovers. No, Michigan State actually won the turnover battle 2-1. Only a fumble lost. Who was it? If it was Childs, I swear to God. It was Childs. And he cannot help himself with turning the ball over. If he took care of the ball, Michigan State would be a much more appealing team to make some games interesting. Water break. Hold on. Solo podcast. Not easy on the vocal cords. Okay. So that was week 6. The picks. I told you it wasn't pretty. Ethan, we didn't get picks from. But me and Corey, whew, God, I am sorry if you picked with us. I went 3-5. Corey went 2-7. He had the extra game to try to make up for volume. So through week 6, Ethan is 39-28. And okay, if you're doing the math on these, I'm like, wait a second, these totals are not adding up. You would be correct. They are not adding up. I think at this point, when we get to the end of the season, we're going to do like who has the best percentage on their bets, because Ethan trying to make up a whole week would just be ridiculous. So Ethan has the same record, 39-28. I am 38-37. Corey is 37-38. Corey dipped below 500 for the first time. And I am flirting with it at 38-37. I need a good week desperately. Okay, before we get into week 7's picks, let's review the AP poll and some of the stuff that changed. So we have Ohio State going from 3-2. We have Oregon going from 6-3. That is now a top 3 matchup this weekend, Oregon hosting Ohio State. That is going to be a fantastic game. I cannot wait to watch. Penn State goes from 7-4. Michigan went from 10-24. How is Michigan still ranked? There is no way, if I'm an AP voter, I'm voting for Michigan to be a ranked team. Absolutely not. That is a mistake. And we told you they were a mistake at 10. Good Lord. USC went from 11 to out. That should have been what happened to Michigan. Indiana went from 23 up to 18. Indiana's ranked 18th in the country. And then Illinois went from 24 to 23. I think Illinois should be higher. Let me pull up the AP poll. I just had it up. AP poll. Because I tell you what, Illinois is a really freaking good team. I think they've got more substance to them than the AP poll is giving them
credit for. Who's above Illinois? Pitt is right above them. Missouri's above them. Oklahoma's above them. I think I'd put them above Pitt and Oklahoma. I think Missouri should probably be above Oklahoma. I think two of those three teams, I would put Illinois above them. After that, you get into the Indiana, Kansas State, Boise State territory, and I don't think they're there. But Oklahoma, Missouri, and Pitt, I think easily Illinois could be up at 21. But neither here nor there. The cream will rise to the top. So let's get into teams that have a chance to make the college football playoff from the Big Ten. Now, this is not mathematical. This is, I'm living in the real world, and these are the only teams from the Big Ten left who have a shot at the playoff. Obviously, you have the undefeated. You have Ohio State, you have Oregon, you have Penn State, and you have Indiana. I love including Indiana in that group. When was the last time Indiana was in the same conversation football-wise as Penn State, Oregon, and Ohio State? That is wild. Those four obviously have playoff visions on their mind. The next three are the one-loss teams. You've got Illinois, Nebraska, and Rutgers. That's where the list ends for, in my opinion, teams in the Big Ten that have a shot to make the playoff. If I had to rank the one-loss teams from Illinois, Nebraska, and Rutgers, if I had to rank who has the best shot left to make the playoff, if it was just based on who I thought was the best team, Illinois would be one, Nebraska would be two, Rutgers would be three. If I'm doing it based on schedule, I know Rutgers has an easy schedule. Let's look at what Illinois has. Illinois plays Purdue this week, because Illinois is who I think is the best of these. Who do they have left? Illinois has Purdue. They have Michigan, they have Oregon, Minnesota, Michigan State. They play Rutgers and then Northwestern. I think win, win, win. Minnesota's a win. Oregon, Michigan, Purdue. You got to think Oregon's a loss. And Illinois at two losses, I don't think that team's getting in. The reality for these three is they probably cannot lose another game and still afford to get in. So Illinois would have to win out and beat Oregon. That team's in. And then Nebraska, I know Nebraska plays Ohio State. Let's check on Nebraska's schedule. Looks like they're on bye this week. Nebraska. Do they play Ohio State after their bye? No, they play Indiana. Oh my gosh, that'll be a sick game. So they play Indiana, Ohio State, UCLA, USC, Wisconsin, and Iowa. There's some tough games in there. If their second loss is to Ohio State, they could potentially get in. If they beat Indiana, that would be a really good win. I'm going to stick with my ranking, though, even after looking at the schedule, that I think Illinois, Nebraska, Rutgers, in that order, have the best chance to make the playoff. If I had to put money on it, I don't think any of them do. But I think right now they have legitimate shots. Legitimate shots. And that concludes the list of teams that can make the playoff from the Big Ten. USC and Michigan have already been eliminated. Wild. What a wild world we live in college football. Okay, the picks for week 7. Let's get into it. On Friday, we've got Northwestern at Maryland. Man, can't wait to watch that. Maryland minus 10.5. And if you remember correctly, my picks have sucked for the last 2 weeks. So whatever I'm about to say, jot it down, do the exact opposite. You might actually win some money. Maryland minus 10.5, Northwestern on the road. I just don't trust Maryland to beat much of anybody by two possessions, even at home. I think you could get a gritty Northwestern team to show up here. So give me Northwestern plus 10.5 at Maryland. Saturday, Washington at Iowa. Iowa minus 3. Washington coming off a really emotional win against Michigan. Iowa coming off looking as bad as they did, but looking bad against Ohio State. Let's see where Washington ranks. in terms of their rush defense? Because that's a big part of this. If Caleb Johnson can't get going, that's going to really debilitate Iowa and what they can do offensively. Washington rush defense. Oh, goodness. This does not look good. I have to go to page 2 on the team rankings. They are 58th in the country in rush defense, averaging 130 yards per game. Yeah, so I'm going to take Iowa here. Washington coming down from the win over Michigan, and then Iowa coming back home, being able to run the ball. Give me Iowa -3. Wisconsin at Rutgers. Rutgers, I just said the clock was striking midnight, but Wisconsin, you know my rule. It's only failed me one time, and I do not think it will fail me again. Give me Rutgers -2.5, because I think Purdue's worse than people think. So give me Rutgers -2.5, especially at home, Wisconsin coming there. Wisconsin doesn't know who they are or what they're doing. Penn State -4.5 on the road at USC. USC at home to me feels different. USC at home feels different. They handled Wisconsin eventually. They need to be better in the first half, absolutely, but I'd rather be a second half team than a first half team. That's what USC is. And James Franklin just continues to make coaching decisions. Whether it's him or their new OC, whatever the coaching decisions are, they continue to just boggle the mind. And James Franklin said something this week too. He was like complaining about the fact that the state college airport, the runway is like not long enough or something for the type of plane they need to take off or whatever. So he was like complaining about the fact that Penn State has to ride a bus 1 hour to get to a different airport to get out to USC. It was like, that's what? Don't be a big baby. Like, why are you complaining about that? You are setting, you've put an excuse out there for your team mentally to grab onto. I hate that mentality from a coach. You are midweek, mid-prep for a team, and you're complaining about a one-hour bus ride? Come on. That sends a horrible message. Give me USC +4.5 at home. Next one, Purdue at Illinois. Illinois -22.5. That is a large number. But Illinois finally gets to come back home after road trips to Nebraska and Happy Valley. And Purdue just got their teeth kicked in by Wisconsin. I'm going to take Illinois. I really believe in them as a team. I think they're really good. They could potentially finish top 20 this year. I think that's where they're going to finish. Ohio State at Oregon. Let me save that one for last. The technical last game of this week in terms of kickoff. Minnesota at UCLA. Minnesota is -5. UCLA has been covering. I'm going to take a similar logic here that I did with Washington. Washington coming off an emotional home win going on the road. Minnesota's doing the same thing. Did I make UCLA? Did I make picking against them a rule? I think I may have. But it's bitten me in the behind in the last 2 weeks. I'm going to go back. I'm going to flip that rule. Especially PJ Fleck. Can you count on PJ Fleck to do something amazing 2 weeks in a row? I don't think so. So give me UCLA +5 at home against Minnesota. Also, that number, you'd think like, what the heck? Minnesota just beat USC. Now they're only favored by 5. Like, Vegas is telling you, yeah, they're only favored by 5. There's a reason. Okay, so the premier game of the weekend. Number 2, Ohio State, traveling to number 3, Oregon. Ohio State is -3 in this game. This is going to be a doozy. Oregon has looked much, much, much better in recent weeks than they did to start the season. Ohio State pretty much looks the same as they have all season. But the best team they've played is Iowa. So you're trying to figure out how many conclusions you can draw about who they are from the games that they played. I'm going to say it again. I think Ohio State this year is Michigan last year. Michigan did the same thing. Super soft schedule, beat up on teams. And then people were like, I don't know. Michigan kept saying, okay, we'll just prove you wrong. And I think Ohio State's going to take some of that to heart that people are saying, put a little chip on their shoulder, and that's the last thing a super talented like this team needs is external motivating factors. To be like, oh, you don't believe us? Okay, let's go ahead and just show you on the field then. And I think they will. They have too many erasers. I could see them falling behind in this one early due to their slow starts. But then even in a hostile road environment, I think they come back and they win this game. I'm going to take Ohio State -3 in this one to cover at Oregon. I think they win by a touchdown. I think they might even win by 10, actually. I think this could get pretty comfortable for them at the end. So those are my picks. You take them or leave them. You should probably leave them, actually. If I was giving sound financial advice, I would say to leave them. All right. That's the episode. Hopefully we'll get a co-host next week. I know you'd rather listen to more people than just me banter on here for 45 minutes. That's not what you came here for. You need some comedic relief. We need Ethan and Corey back. But if you did listen to this point, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to the show. Again, make sure you subscribe and follow wherever you're listening, Apple or Spotify. Find us on Twitter at B1GBanterPod. Follow us on Instagram at B1GBanter. Twitter is where we're more active on Saturdays, like actually talking about games and stuff like that. Instagram is where we'll put like polls in the stories so you can submit questions for the episode that sometimes we do. We will also go live sometimes on Instagram. We will post a graphic and call it Halftime Hangs, and we'll do halftime Instagram lives on certain games. And you know what I think we'll do? If I'm able to do it, because I have family in this week, I may do Ohio State at Oregon Halftime Hangs. I have family in, so TBD, but I will try to get either me, Ethan, or Corey on Instagram Live Halftime for Ohio State, Oregon, because that should be a great game and everyone should be tuned in. So follow us on Instagram so you can come on and chat with us about that one. Hey, have a great week. Have a fantastic game day. Peace.